Hi, babes.
Hey, Babylonians.
Welcome, Babeologists.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I know we haven't published in like a month.
It's been a hot minute.
It's been a minute. Yeah, we've been busy planning the podcast festival.
Mm-hmm.
We have been locking down sponsors and
headliners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And say a little bit about the headliners, Brian.
We have three like main headliners. Sawbones, Still Buffering, and Court Appointed. All like run by like the same podcasting network.
Yeah.
And one of them, Sawbones, is number 16 on the iTunes comedy podcast charts.
Damn.
And they are coming to Columbus
yeah.
to headline the Columbus Podcast Festival.
Hell yeah.
The same podcast has sold out a 900 seat theater in Portland.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
Yeah.
So get on it.
Get your tickets now, friends, because this baby's going to sell out.
You can check it out at columbuspodcastfestival.com.
Wink. Find us on Facebook. And is there a Twitter?
There's a Twitter.
There's a Twitter,
a Facebook, and an Instagram.
Okay.
And all of them should be like CBUS Podfest.
Okay. CBUS Podfest.
Or if you go to the website, yeah. all the links are there too.
They're all there, baby.
We made it very easy for you guys.
We couldn't have made it easier for you.
We would have to buy your tickets for you.
Right,
in order
which
to make
we
it.
Won't.
We won't do that.
But that's the only way it would be easier.
By the way, there's these two other really cool festival events happening, pre-events, before the main show.
Yeah.
The podcast workshop.
Yeah.
And the DIY contest.
Yeah.
More details on how to submit and to be a part of both of those are on our website. But the easiest way for you guys to get on it right now is to buy early bird tickets.
Early bird.
It gets you everything.
Access to 2 days of shows.
2 days of shows.
And?
DIY contest and podcast workshop. And you get a free piece of merch on your way in both days.
Oh, my God. How could you pass that deal up? And how much is it, Brian?
$20.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
$20?
Seriously.
Shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's a deal.
You got to do it.
Hell yeah.
You got to do it.
How much are one-day passes?
One-day passes are $10.
Okay.
You can also just go to the pre-festival events for like $10.
Yeah.
But if you're going to go to like the... But we kind of kick you out if you don't have the early bird.
Yeah, get out.
Get out, and you'll have to come back in, pay another $10.
Yeah.
So you might as well get the...
Just do it.
And you know what? The two-day is like $15.
Yeah.
So just $5 extra.
Get the early bird before they sell out.
Yeah, do it.
Do it. There's capacity, okay?
There is.
There's not enough room for everyone in the workshop.
No.
There's not.
Only the next generation of podcasters get to go to that.
That's right. Get on it while you can.
Yeah. Be a part of the next generation.
Be a part of it.
Be a part of it.
Be a part of the movement.
Yes. The podcast movement.
God. It's going to be so good. I'm so excited.
Speaking of movements.
Yeah.
We had quite a movement on our show today.
We had some of the best leaders of the abortion awareness and providing funding. I don't know what I'm trying to say. You're going to have to cut this out.
It is hard to like measure everything that they do.
Yeah, of the abortion. I mean, some of the like great leaders in our city of the abortion movement from Women Have Options Ohio, which is super exciting because you and I are part of the Back Alley Aborpins,
mm-hmm.
Which is our bull-a-thon team. And we, through the bull-a-thon,
best name,
through the bull-a-thon, you can raise money for Women Have Options, which supplies basically funds to women who are in need of money to get their abortion.
Right.
So they talk a lot about all the work that they do, and it's super insightful and really...
We're even doing a fundraiser stand-up show for them.
Yeah.
Hands off my labia.
Yeah, lay off my labia.
Lay off my labia.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we're doing a fundraising show. That's on April 13th mm-hmm. at Cafe Kerouac at 8 o'clock. And we are also donating some money from the podcast festival to Women Have Options.
A lot of the proceeds are going to Women Have Options, guys.
Yeah.
Like, see how this all...
It's all coming together. It's all coming together. And the Bowl-a-thon is the 27th. So if you want to participate, you still have time, almost a month, to get involved. Make your team, join a team, raise some money, do some good.
Is it the 27th?
The 29th.
29th.
You're right.
Podcast festival is on 27th.
Because the podcast festival is the 26th and 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys. Lots going on.
Christine's on the board of the podcast festival. And we could not do it without her.
Whatever. You get your dates mixed up when you're very important, Brian. That's what happens.
I'll know what that's like someday.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So anyway, this was a great interview. I loved it so much.
Christine hadn't done one in a while.
Yeah.
And this is a big one.
Yeah, it was a big one.
But you weren't rusty. That's the thing. Oh, you were so on point.
Thank you. That's so nice.
I just want to get to the episode so people can see.
Let's do it.
I mean here, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Here we go.
All right. Bye. Kisses.
Kisses. Yes.
You've had your 15 minutes. Oh, you want another chance? Bell instead of dance and creep on the couch for another 5 hours. It's a real world marathon. TV out of mind. Now that I've had my 15.
So, where did you go? You were gone somewhere?
I was in Boston.
Okay.
For just about 2 years.
Okay. Did you go there for a job or just for fun or what?
A job. And I was just working out there, and I also joined the... It's part of the leadership circle for the Eastern Massachusetts Abortion Fund.
Oh, okay.
So I got to do a little bit of work out there. I learned how they did things.
Yeah.
And came back and just reconnected with Steph.
Okay. And for you personally, Lauren, like, where did your passion for this come from? Do you remember, like, the first, or not the first, but just do you remember feeling like, hey, I need to get involved in that, and why?
This is... absurd to say, but a male classmate arguing against Roe v. Wade in AP government in high school. And I remember sitting there looking around my classmates, and no one was really saying anything back, or no one was challenging him. And I just remember thinking, well, this is my turn. this is my role now.
Yeah.
So that was the first time
you were
that
just inspired.
It's like, don't tell me what to do. Yeah. Don't tell us gesturing to the class what to do.
Yeah.
So that's where it started.
Okay. That was the first yeah. first instance. What about you, Steph?
Oh, God. So I grew up evangelical Christian.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yep.
Here we go.
The story. with that said, my parents have always been pro-choice. So,
yeah, that's good.
But I grew up evangelical Christian, specifically Nazarene. And when they started covering abortion in Sunday school class, and I came to my mother, and she wasn't too happy that they were covering it in, I'm still in elementary school.
Oh, that's young.
So it's, yeah, I mean, I went to Bible camp and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Look, the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. The whole church camp thing. Yeah. A Jesus camp. That's the documentary.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Very scary.
Kind of, I mean, it's totally real. Yeah, wow. Yeah.
All right, we're going to talk about that a little
bit too. All right. So, and then my mom arguing with my Sunday school teacher about how it's inappropriate to tell her daughter what to think about abortion in her body. And it, you know, my mom grew up a Baptist, and my grandmother is just kind of quiet about it.
Yeah.
But my mom went to Planned Parenthood. She found out she was pregnant at Planned Parenthood with me, and they gave her prenatal vitamins and all that other kind of stuff.
Wow.
So yeah, that was kind of, I knew my stance on it.
Yeah.
And then
really
had to kind of go, yeah, pretty early.
Yeah.
you know, and then just like spent the rest of my childhood growing up arguing about it.
Yeah.
The time in high school, a prayer at the pole and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Interesting.
Wow. So did you like, do you talk to your mom about her views and like why, like, it sounds like they were pretty conservative. Is that right? Aside from,
you know,
pro-choice?
Yeah.
Or no?
I'm not really. So my dad was a preacher's kid.
Oh, okay. PK.
Yeah.
Jen is one too. Yeah.
And so he always had kind of a bit of a rebellious streak, especially kind of middle kid and all.
Yeah.
Kind of youngest-ish as well. At least for a while until his little sister. So he was, you know, he had his own views. But during the, I'm going to age myself, during the like, you know, late 80s, early 90s, my parents were really kind of, they got kind of deep into the Nazarene church. We were a military family. So that's kind of the culture of it. Mm-hmm. And it was also an immediate community.
Right, right.
When we had to move somewhere, because we literally moved every year.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it was an immediate community. And so they got real deep into it to have friends, I think.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But my parents are lifelong Democrats.
Okay. Yeah. So they're not really that conservative at all.
They're not conservative
no.
at all.
Okay.
No.
They're just in the NAS. Yeah. Like they're that seems like a really conservative community to me. I guess that's why I thought that.
It is a very conservative community.
Okay.
I mean, I had a full ride scholarship to Mount Vernon Nazarene College and was going to go or was thinking about going. And then my youth pastor brought me to do the tour.
Yeah.
And then they split up the men and the women.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, so ladies.
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love your face. So ladies, I mean, we all know that, you know, we'll get an education here and you'll leave with your, you know, BS or BA, but we all know that we're here really for that MRS.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked up at Joel, my youth pastor, and like looked back at the crowd, then everybody was like nodding their head, and I'm just like, no.
No.
I like ran.
Oh my gosh. What did you end up doing instead?
Oh, I ended up going to Ohio University.
Oh, okay.
Radical decision.
Right. No.
They actually had the best program that I was going for. I was a photojournalism major.
Okay. So, all right. So you're... Oh. Man, this is so interesting. Okay. So how
does... And now I run abortion fund.
Yeah. So how does that, like, are you still a person of faith?
I am not.
Okay.
I'm a card-carrying atheist.
Okay. So, and how has that weaved in and out of your, like, work in, like, in this field? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, okay. No. I feel like... So in my time with Planned Parenthood, because I used to work for Planned Parenthood, I found that in my organizing work, it's wonderful to be able to kind of speak the language of people of faith.
Yeah.
I do have like moments where I have to kind of step back and I do feel uncomfortable in churches just based on my history there. Yeah, it just makes my heart race. And kind of just, uncomfortable.
It triggers you a little bit?
It does.
Yeah.
It totally does.
Yeah.
But to be able to speak their language, to be able to recite, you know, verses and...
Yeah.
I used to be able to do that a little more than I am now. But I feel that helps me in my work.
Yeah, right. Helps you connect.
Exactly.
Maybe to people that you wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
And there's a gigantic community, especially at least in this area, because of the large Nazarene presence of people who used to be Nazarene or used to be evangelical who are now radical liberals.
Okay, yeah. I mean, rebellion or whatever. What do you think it is?
Oh.
Just like coming to your senses or like starting to think for yourself or what is
Maybe
it?
Maybe it's like actually reading the Bible.
Oh, okay.
And, I don't know. I think it's a long process.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is a process of letting go.
Yeah.
Of that comfort of like, there's someone watching over me.
Yeah.
But I think that there's so much, at least from the church that I had growing up.
Yeah.
And I've now realized that there are churches that are super liberal and actually kind of go by, you know, what the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
But I didn't know of that when I was growing up.
Right.
And so everything that I had read wasn't what was actually happening in my church.
Yeah.
So it was just all of the hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of keen eye on the seeing the hypocrisy, being able to kind of like feel it and point it out, and then being able to see it everything else in life, in the government or in the like, I think that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So Lauren, do you have any affiliation with faith? Like, has that ever played a part in your life or in this work for you?
I'm Jewish. I was raised Jewish.
Okay.
My parents are also Democrats.
Okay.
I think recently liberal.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I honestly have not read the Bible.
Yeah.
I always,
makes sense.
Maybe because I'm Jewish, I felt maybe an immediate affinity for this kind of work. It seemed like the justice part of anything always speaks to me. I think that's how I was raised, my particular denomination and my synagogue. But more than anything, just I feel like the people I associated with, I don't go to services anymore or anything, but
yeah.
There's always the, if something bad is happening, you should be trying to stop it or fix it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's across other religions too. That's not just Judaism, I like that part of faith.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Do you run into it a lot? Like in your work, this is sort of to both of you. Like, do you feel like that's part of your work? Like sort of undoing, maybe some of the misconceptions that people of faith maybe have. Do you feel like that's part of your work? Does that make sense?
I feel like maybe the people I engage on it know that faith isn't my, either it's not the thing I'm most well versed in.
Yeah.
I think I tend to talk more about either day-to-day politics or what's
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I touch that often. It doesn't come up in my conversation.
Okay.
I think that in general, I mean, being somebody who isn't of faith anymore, like I kind of embody the stereotype of somebody who's pro-choice, but I do enjoy kind of the facts and figures of that no matter what religion you are, people get abortions at the same rate.
Right.
And I really love partnering and doing work with the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. They're rock stars and leaders of faith who
absolutely
essentially, you know, talk about abortion in the context of faith.
Right.
And say, you know, it isn't immoral, bad. You know, this is something that has had it's historic and it's in the Bible. It's, you know, the women's autonomy is, you know, historically relevant in the Bible and in a lot of faith traditions.
Okay.
So kind of talking about it like that, but also saying, because I think this is really important, that no matter what your faith is, you need to, like, it's your choice and you need to be all right with it. So everybody's going to have different feelings about their abortions and making sure that they have the support structure and be able to talk to who they need to talk to. So, you know, I think that I'm more concerned about the people of faith who are having abortions and making sure that they have the resources they need to feel, you know, that they deserve to be able to make the best decision for themselves.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. That was such an interesting sort of like part of your identity to me, because I am not a person of faith. So I was just, you know, but a lot of that like legislation that goes on in our country is sort of like done in the name of like, you know, Christianity mostly. Right. So it's, you know, it's just, I feel like there's an interesting tie there between like you know, the hypocrisy that you were talking about earlier and like how we sort of work to undo that attitude in our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of interested in digging into that a little bit, but we can move on because we don't have to talk about that on like. So you decided, Stephanie, you decided that you were like, you knew that you were pro-choice for like when you were a kid. So how, so give me like a rundown of like how you got into like, did you start at Planned Parenthood or did you start somewhere else in doing this work?
So I was mostly into, like during high school and even in undergrad, I was mostly an LGBT advocate.
Okay.
Like, making kind of safe zones and in those kind of programs, training. Yeah. And, you know, when I was in high school, bringing like the AIDS quilt and doing kind of like, yeah, talking a lot about mostly like LGBT rights.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I was a senior in college in 2004 and I went to the Women's March mm-hmm. in Washington mm-hmm. or the not Women's March. It was the March for Women's Lives in Washington.
Okay.
And, you know, there was something that I'd always been pro-choice.
Yeah.
But I was in Athens and, you know, there wasn't really necessarily something huge to fight that I saw.
Yeah.
That was, you know, really connecting with me.
Yeah.
And that's when I essentially joined the movement.
Yeah.
I was activated at that march. Joined for a very brief time from the rest of my senior year, the Vox that was at Ohio University.
Okay. And tell people what Vox is if they don't know.
So it doesn't exist anymore as Vox. It exists now as Generation Action,
I think, right? So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Vox used to be, it's Latin for Voices.
Yeah.
It was Voices for Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And it was essentially Planned Parenthood's version of a college group.
Yeah.
College organizing.
Right.
And yeah, that's
so you. Yeah, so you were in the Vox group mm-hmm. at your school.
Yeah, the kind of brand new Vox group. Mm-hmm. Again, it was kind of an early attempt at college organizing because the feminist movement hadn't been doing a lot of that.
Yeah,
at least kind of in that time period.
Yeah.
So, but the March for Women's Lives brought a whole bunch of people in.
Okay.
And they kind of really dug down and started that.
Yeah. And so you sort of like gained all of like the sort of knowledge that you needed to like build a base on there. And then how did you end up working at Planned Parenthood?
So the first time I worked at Planned Parenthood, I was a sexuality educator in Tacoma, Washington.
Oh.
Working with a group of peer educators. Mm-hmm. And it was actually through AmeriCorps.
Oh, okay.
I had decided that I was not really cut out for photojournalism, not really confident in where the industry was going.
Okay.
Not feeling you could necessarily thrive in it. So it's like, what can I do? And so I joined AmeriCorps mm-hmm. and got and went to Planned Parenthood.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's just been history now.
And then I went, I was at Planned Parenthood and then I came back to Ohio for, I worked for a nonprofit in Appalachian, Ohio called Rural Action. It was a social, economic, and environmental justice program.
Okay.
And then I went back to grad school and then worked for Planned Parenthood again. Yeah.
And then you got your job at Women Have Options last year.
Last year.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy anniversary again. Thank you. I don't know if we said that online, did we? I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe you
so.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Intro.
All right. Okay, Lauren. So tell me about your like involvement in all of this. Like, what have you done before this, and like, how did you get here?
So I started at Ohio State in 2009.
Yeah.
And Ohio State has it's called Condom Club.
Yeah.
And you may be familiar. So basically, you just purchase a lot of condoms for a nominal amount, and I was walking around the student involvement fair looking for that because I thought it was an actual club, but it's just a service through the health center.
Yeah,
you just like go to the counter and buy the condoms there. Yeah. But I was walking around looking for like the student group with the condoms, and I happened across the Vox table there.
Yeah.
And someone who was a few grades above me in high school who happened to go to Ohio State, like happened to be working a shift that day. So she stopped me and we were just catching up and she convinced me to put my email down and I obviously agreed with the cause. I signed up for like, I don't know, 15 things that day, but that was the one that I was like, oh, well, I know someone, I'll go back.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the rest is history. The group was largely folks who were getting ready to graduate. Mm-hmm. And so I just started going to meetings, basically. Mm-hmm. I really liked what they were doing. It's just a fun group. It's collecting signatures, passing out condoms. Like, it's just such an easy, fun group of people to be around.
Yeah.
And they asked me to be president, essentially, like a quarter into my first just a few weeks at Ohio State.
We see it in you, Lauren. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
you were born with it.
It was fun. So I, you know, decided to keep coming back. Eventually met Stephanie and did a few internships at what was then Planned Parenthood of Central Ohio. And then the next fall was 2010. So we did the a lot of organizing work around the election, the midterms.
Yeah.
Which at the time I thought was brutal, but now that I've lived through another election cycle, I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess I'd rather do that again. And just, I went on to, I was in DC for a summer and interned with the Planned Parenthood Federation.
Okay.
So yeah, I just bounced around from Planned Parenthoods all during undergrad.
Yeah.
And, in 2012, I actually was, I worked on Tim Kaine's Senate race in Virginia, and Steph called and said, you know, I'm moving on to something else. There's an organizing job for the 2012 election that's now open.
Oh.
I think you should apply for it. So I did, and I came back to Ohio and got to do that organizing.
Oh, cool. Cool. Do you still work in politics?
I work at Ohio State now.
Oh, okay.
Fundraising, but not for politics. I mean, I do bowl-a-thons. So
yeah, right.
Indirectly.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So earlier you were talking about just like how a bunch of funds exist for abortion and how after the election, like a lot of people were looking for, you know, outlets, I guess. Do you want to talk a little bit about that right now?
Sure. So we are part of the National we as in Women Have Options Ohio, are one of many abortion funds that are part of the National Network of Abortion Funds.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Do you know how many are across the country?
Oh, there's it's over 100.
There's, I don't know if it's every state, but I mean,
some states have more multiple, than one, right? And then some states kind of combine depending on the state.
Okay.
Right. So there's this vast network of very dedicated people.
Mm-hmm.
Who all have, it's really impressive because everyone has different restrictions that they face and different levels of funding and different levels of support. Because when I was in Massachusetts, the fund there, we got donations from all over the country, and then they would turn around and provide seed money to other funds because Massachusetts is doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we come to Ohio and it's like all hands on deck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we do get donations from people all over the place who are mostly supporting them, you know, the bowlers and the people that they know locally. But it's a really, really dedicated group of people who just have this clear goal in mind. And I think Steph originally told me this, you know, many years ago, but it was the idea is to organize yourself out of a job. And here, the best case scenario for Women Have Options is that we're no longer needed because abortion is accessible.
Wow, that gave me chills.
I mean, we're a Band-Aid, essentially.
Yeah,
like, ideally, abortion is covered just like any other health care.
Right.
And ideally, health care is universal.
Yeah. Right.
So everybody can access the health care that they need, including abortion.
Right.
And, you know, we were hoping that we'd get somewhere closer to that, but things end up getting worse at this.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much does an average abortion cost?
Oh, that's a hard question. It starts at $550.
Okay.
And that's kind of like base. That is early. That is no complications.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Somebody who doesn't need anesthesia or anything like that, or additional pain medications. So that is like complete base cost.
Okay.
And it can go all the way up to like $30,000.
Wow.
So, and
holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about, yeah, 30,000.
Yeah.
Is the most kind of complicated late abortion. Yeah.
There's a point where just every week it just, it gets exponentially more expensive. It's not $50 every week you go as it gets later.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. as far as in Ohio, a couple of thousand of dollars mm-hmm. is kind of what kind of the most expensive abortions look like. Okay. We're kind of talking about kind of $6,000 and $7,000 dollars, but the vast majority of abortions are under $1,000.
Okay. And on, so my team is part of the Bullathon, so I'm really excited. And we
should
have
tell
already,
your team name.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
It's the, it. It's tasteless. It's the back alley of Abortpins. I suggested Abortpins, and then Dave Berkey like improved it by adding back alley. So that's all I'm saying. So my team's part of the Bullathon, and I'm really excited. I'm so happy that we're part of it, and we've already exceeded our goal.
Woot!
No big deal. We're number 5 in the most money raised. Not a big deal. So that's really exciting. But on, so I want you to talk a little bit about like the different categories of like X amount of dollars will pay for one night stay in a hotel or something. Like, tell me a little bit about where the money goes that you raise.
Yeah. So the vast majority of the money that we raise goes to making up the funds that the patient themselves can't come up with. So, and other abortion funds, because like each clinic also, like Planned Parenthood has a fund that's like Planned Parenthood funds. And then there are a couple of other kind of national funds.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those funds have varying amount of restrictions and regulations. And like, you know, you can't qualify unless you're on public assistance or this far along or have an address.
Yeah.
Kind of things like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... So we...
Red tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We kind of fill in for that.
Okay.
Our average grant is $100.
Oh, okay.
And that's just, it's the, whatever, you know, people need.
Yeah.
I mean, people are oftentimes doing so many different things just to be able to pull together what they can, either, you know, asking friends and family, selling things, skipping their rent or whatever. And, you know, they've done all that already.
Yeah.
And then still can't come up with the rest of the money, because most people don't have $500.
No.
Or $550 that they can just spend, you know, in an emergency.
Right.
Let alone the most marginalized in our society. So the people we mostly serve are, you know, homeless folks and, you know, immigrants and, you know, a lot of people in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who, you know, are needing, you know, this is the only thing that they can do. Like, so we're that kind of the last chance fund for them. We're hoping to grow beyond kind of that last chance fund.
Yeah.
But so right now, just whatever people need left.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting a new program. We're really excited about this. We just got a grant to do it.
Ooh.
Really to do practical support. So that is, so there are people that need overnight stays.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are there the people that need the overnight stays for like the 24-hour waiting period, but there's also, and we've actually started this already, housing people in Cincinnati who have 2-day procedures.
Yeah.
Because once you're along to a certain point, your procedure is actually 2 days.
Oh, wow. And I had no idea.
And people were traveling hours.
Yeah.
And essentially in the middle of their abortion procedure or sleeping in the parking lot of the abortion clinic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So neither of those we want, especially if people are like crossing state lines. And that happened a lot.
Yeah.
So we worked it out with the Planned Parenthood in Cincinnati that for these patients that our funds would go towards overnight hotel stay in between the middle of their procedure.
Okay.
And we're working on how to essentially take that statewide.
Yeah.
And also include transportation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what does that look like? Bus fare, gas cards, whatever it people need and want.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time people would rather their friend drive them.
Right.
Because that, you know, feels safe. That feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. But their friend just needs gas money to do it.
Right.
And then, you know, and kind of looking into what other things, you know, there are like childcare and other, you know, food for when they're staying overnight. Like, what are the things that they need?
Yeah.
So, and those other barriers.
Wow.
And you know, there are medical rates at hotels. And so we're trying to go into those like medical rates and have those kind of relationships with the hotels and things, but it's a big project to take on.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing. That's really good work. I mean, I'm just like really proud of you right now. Like I feel really happy and not that you need my apology. Anyway.
You help make it happen.
You're bowling. We're bowling. Yeah. I'm so excited. So why bowling though? Like, have you ever been asked that? Like, why bowling? Like, how did it happen?
Always. Do you know the story or do you?
I know it's, I mean, it's not just us. It's everyone bowls, but I know the puns that go around it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know the original story, but I know it's striking down barriers.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a full story. I don't know.
I mean, essentially, nationally, they were looking for something that we could do to engage grassroots, you know, people to peer fund, right?
Yeah.
About, I think it was 8 years ago, we were a part of the first bowl-a-thon. The first NANAF bowl-a-thon. NANAF is the National Network of Abortion Funds.
Mm-hmm.
And so there had been one abortion fund that had done it, and it worked really well. And it's just kind of like, it's just like, why not?
You're right.
You know, this is something that it's like, it's family friendly.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's not particularly athletic. I mean, we're not doing 5Ks here.
No.
Right.
No, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. it's silly, which is really the culture of abortion funds. Like you were talking about kind of how irreverent your name is.
Yeah.
Like it's, I mean, that's kind of the culture.
That's how a lot of them are.
I mean, that's how the culture of abortion funds are.
Yeah.
We don't take ourselves particularly seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's part of what we have to do. We hear a lot of stories.
Right.
And we need to some levity. So we do that through fundraising and really we need to have fun. Feminists need to have fun.
I know.
And we need to, you know, kick our shoes off and put on silly shoes.
Right.
And we need to and we need lots of, you know, making jokes about balls and just, you know, the alleys, right?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
You know, so it just,
Fit.
It totally fit. I mean, it fit just kind of like every summer we have a taco or beer challenge, you know, it's like, cause why not?
Why not
eat a taco or drink a beer for abortion funds? You know, it's just fun. And it's this year, NANAF's goal is nationally to raise $1 million.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Which is, it's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge.
He's so huge. And last year, so it progressively gets bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And each year because it gets bigger and bigger, it gets more attention.
Yeah.
And oh man, a bunch of pro-choicers bowling for abortion access.
Yeah.
Annoys the crap out of the opposition, especially the names and the blogs. it's so fun. Like I definitely do the kind of go through so I don't give them web traffic, but I still love to read the blogs about like how terrible we are for bowling for abortions.
Right.
So a lot of, and how terrible our names are. And we do dress up and we have, you know, photo booth backdrops. We eat cupcakes. We, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah. We need to celebrate.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of, I did want to talk about the bullathon a little bit, but I do have like serious questions that I need answered because I'm a real interviewer.
You are.
This is very official.
Yeah.
I know. Don't you feel like you're at NPR right now?
I do.
Yeah. All sides with Ann Fisher. All right. Anyway. No, that's not where we are. I do have a really, like, I do have a really pressing question, actually, and that is about the 20-week abortion ban.
All right.
Have you, like, what kind of consequences have come out of that that you've seen?
Yeah. So the 20-week abortion ban is...
It's in effect right now, correct?
It is. It is. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So essentially it does a couple of things.
Yeah.
One, it mostly affects people with need for abortion in, you know, the most, you know, desperate situations.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about people who are, you know, minors seeking care who weren't able to get an abortion in time. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that is because of rape or incest or like not safe or, you know, it just, they couldn't seek care.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it's medical conditions.
Okay.
Mostly these are unviable pregnancies or, there is something severely medically wrong with, the woman carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
Or with the fetus itself.
Yeah.
So, and unless, and this is where the law is so cruel, unless the woman is literally on death's door, and this is not just, you know, this is not like, oh, she's going to like, you know, lose a limb or something like that. That it literally has to be on death's door for her to be able to get an abortion in state.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the other things that kind of fall because of that is if you can't get an abortion in state, even if it's medically necessary,
mm-hmm.
so many of our insurance companies, mm-hmm. even if insurance does, will cover it. If it's out of state, it's out of network.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a person needing a post 20-week abortion because of the span. She wasn't able to get it in state. She had insurance. She had the other.
Gonna have to cut this out, Brian. You're being real loud. The dog cast is happening.
Yep. Yep.
Guys, sorry. Inappropriate timing.
Yeah, come on.
Telling a heartbreaking
room.
Story.
At least bark during the fun parts. My God.
So this person needed this medically necessary abortion.
Yeah.
And they had to go out of state. They had insurance and but because they had insurance, they couldn't get other abortion fund assistance.
Yeah.
For where they were at.
Right.
And they also, it was also at the end of the month, mm-hmm. so everybody else was dry mm-hmm. and they couldn't.
Yeah.
And this woman was from Ohio, so they gave us a call and said, is there any way, can you help?
Yeah.
And it's not normally the way we fund abortions. Normally we fund abortions in Ohio because we work directly with clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a direct connection with this particular clinic. But we were like, you know what? We've got to do something. Mm-hmm. And I did a call out on Facebook. I set up a fundraising page online, did a call out on Facebook, did a mass email, and we, you know, paid the $8,000 left of her abortion and to have funds to pay for the next person that has an emergency,
wow.
at least some for the next person that has an emergency.
Yeah.
So... that's lucky.
Yeah.
And really, like, you know, that person, like, the relief, because otherwise she couldn't have had it. Like,
yeah.
the relief that she had was just, yeah, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. She had actually like done as much as she could. Like she had actually raised $4,000 on her own.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Through from her own family.
Right.
And she just, she couldn't do anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She, yeah, that's a lot of money.
It's a hell of a lot of money. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife, Jen, works in the NICU and sees a lot of preemies, mm-hmm. preemie babies. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, we say to each other, like, if one of these lawmakers, if Kasich would just, like, walk into a NICU, like, perhaps he would change his mind, right? Do you think that there's anything that could get these people to, like, what do you think gets people to, like, see the light?
Mm.
Do you think? Have you seen that happen?
I'm trying not to. I'm trying not to bug at the mic, but
I'm trying to think of things that are not pie in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think of things that aren't
like real, practical.
Capping campaign finance and you know, I'm trying to think of how to separate politicians from the interests that they may be beholden to. But
yes, yeah.
I think I like. And I think this answer is really hard because we've been in like the room with lawmakers and folks telling their stories mm-hmm. and seen the lawmakers in Ohio roll their eyes and make snide, horrible comments at these people who are just pouring their heart out, talking about their like. The last time that the heartbeat bill, not this last time, but the time before that, the heartbeat bill made it to the Senate mm-hmm. or to the Senate committee, there's somebody who was telling her story about her her sexual assault.
Yeah.
And there were lawmakers scoffing and rolling their eyes at her, the sexual assault victim. And I'm just like, just hold me back, because I'm just seething at the complete lack of empathy that these mostly old white guys have for this woman that's pouring their heart out.
Right.
But they're just like, you know, fawning over these, you know, these other ladies, these, you know, white ladies that come in with their strollers and talk mm-hmm. about how much they, you know, they hate abortion.
Yeah.
And
it's mind blowing.
It is. And so like, I'm honestly, I don't know, because they've got these blinders on and they just automatically think that anybody who had like,
it's like a moral judgment.
It's
right?
a complete moral judgment.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's what my thinking is. We don't need to convince those people. We need to replace those people.
We
need to get some. Yeah.
That's a good candidates. Point. That's a really good point. Can you talk a little bit about like the kinds of like groups that they're beholden to that you were mentioning earlier?
I'm just thinking of the,
like just money the, really the, it comes back
the
to
the war chest that, some of our opponents just sit on, and the connections that they have as political appointees as a result, and just a cycle.
I mean, that Mike Gonadakis,
right? Exactly.
What's that? That Mike Gonadakis, who's the president of Ohio Right to Life, sits on the Ohio Medical Board.
Oh,
yeah,
a political appointee, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's horrifying. I didn't know that.
It is.
There's so many things that I don't know. So you can just go ahead and educate me.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of, these are some of the reasons why our clinics are really struggling to stay open.
Yeah.
Is because you've got people within like embedded in these, in these regulatory boards who have it out for these medical facilities.
Right, right.
In these very specific 9 medical facilities in Ohio.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sometimes it's the heartbeat bill, but oftentimes it's okay, let's just slowly chip away at it at the right.
Right.
As many different ways as we can to weaken it and just narrow it as much as we can.
It's transfer agreements. It's telling doctors they need to lie to their patients. Right. Mm-hmm. It is.
God. Making people sit through. Do you have to like sit through videos sometimes of like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Not funding sex education.
Yeah. I mean,
we can go all the way
start
back.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
my
gosh. Or even like not even funding or not even allowing Planned Parenthood to, mm-hmm. you know, participate or to, or any abortion clinic to partner with yeah. anything public.
Yeah.
So that mm-hmm. includes public hospitals.
Yeah.
So you can't have a transfer agreement with a public hospital. So our local Planned Parenthood, our local, like our founders here, clinic, they can't work with Ohio State. They have to wow. find another hospital.
But then sometimes, mostly hospitals are like of religious affiliation,
bing,
right?
Bing.
Yep.
Exactly. It's yeah. like, it's like these laws are made
oh
to make abortion as inaccessible as possible and to shut down clinics.
It's weird. It's
I know.
So weird.
Yeah.
Did you see that Sam B episode where she talked to the Texas lawmaker about the abortion clinics? And it was like, there was some law about like the size of the hallways mm-hmm. in the clinic. Mm-hmm. And she was like, are you like specifically like funding back alley abortions or something? Like she made some like really funny, like off color joke. And I was just like, I couldn't live without you, Sam B. Like, I don't know how we would make it without these kinds of people in the world. And you know, you guys fall into that category too. So I don't know how we would make it.
I need Samantha B. She gives me life.
Yeah.
And her humor. Oh my God.
Yes.
We need our comedians.
Yeah. No, I know.
Times like these.
Oh man.
So you got the serious stuff, that serious
yeah.
burning question out of the way.
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about that because like the idea that, you know, women are just so undervalued in our society has been on my mind a lot lately. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you see that all the time, you know, and just thinking that like women deserve less rights to everything is like really stressing me out. And that there are very few men who will like take on the job of like educating other men,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, do you feel that?
I mean, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah. And I think that, and I think it's also particularly difficult with, you know, with reproductive rights though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have, you know, and we do have, you know, our, you know, male allies, but I know that at least the male allies that I know mm-hmm. have a very difficult time talking about it because this is not their lived experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't have that experience of, you know, being a female.
Yeah.
And so they're not like, at least the ones that I know, a lot of them try to not speak for, you know,
yeah.
people outside of their own experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, I think that there's a lot that we can do as a movement
yeah.
to train our allies not to, you know, just like any movement with allies,
yeah.
you know, we need to give them the tools to speak to their people.
Right, right.
Right?
Right.
And, you know, and not overpower the voices and the stories of those who are living
the experience.
Living the experience.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's
I
a
mean,
balance.
It definitely is. And what I run into is like, you know, like I'll use my voice for whatever reason I need to, but sometimes I'm just tired
mm-hmm.
of explaining that like my life is different because of like my body. Like that's just the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like sometimes, you know, men don't want to hear that. They don't get it. But I think that hearing it from maybe someone who has like their same experience might be more powerful to them to understand
mm-hmm.
it. So
you need some quick, like, you know, just phrases that they literally can copy and paste into Facebook posts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, hey dude, it's not your life.
Yeah.
You know, F off, you know,
yeah.
just like,
yeah, something.
Yeah. yeah. You know, something. she can be trusted with her own medical experiences
yeah.
and decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm not going to judge you for the cavity that you had filled last week. Like,
why do you need to talk about this at all? Just
exactly.
get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, it's just stressing me out a lot lately.
It's stressful.
Yeah.
This is really, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just
yeah.
so basic.
Yeah.
Like these are our bodies. These are our
yeah.
medical experiences and so much. And it's just, this is the most drastic example of it, but so much women are, and just like any in femmes, like,
yeah,
are,
right, right.
Yeah. The
inclusive women.
Yeah.
Ish. Yeah.
It's not valued and people are not trusted to make their own decisions. This is why, and have their own thoughts. This is why, like, mansplaining is a term, right?
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's just, we can't be experts.
Yeah.
On anything.
Yeah. Right.
And this is why, you know, a woman can't be president, apparently. Yeah. You know, it's just kind of all goes into it.
Yeah.
But
it's this, like, big cloud of microaggressions and trauma.
Yes.
Have you watched 13 Reasons Why on Netflix?
Yeah, I've been hearing about it though.
Okay. No. So on this topic, and this is an official recommendation, 13 of Babes to Know podcast. 13 Reasons Why on Netflix will, like, for this reason, like, especially men need to be watching it, but it gives a really, the main character basically is a witness and a perpetrator of certain kinds of trauma and microaggressions. Mm. And you see him sort of reacting to it. And
this
it is
really good without spoilers and all that.
Yeah.
So you're
well
like
said.
Delicately stepping around some, like, major plot points.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's juicy as fuck. But it's also just like, it gives you a really good view into, like, you know, what it's like to be a girl. And especially, like, in those vulnerable times,
right?
In high school. Yeah.
High schoolers.
Yeah. So you should watch it. Anyway.
It's on Netflix. It's a Netflix show.
It's on Netflix. Right? Yeah. So what are your abortion bowl team names? Tell me more about that. We'll get back to the topic at hand.
My team is Make Abortion Great Again.
Oh, good one. That's a good one.
I'm not an original thought, but I'm terrible at the names. But yeah. Yeah. And
okay.
People got mad at me for it. But
oh, well.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have a team yet. I've kind of been holding myself off as like to pull in anyone who doesn't feel like they have a team or just almost a mother duck, if you will.
Yeah.
It's always working in my mind. I don't know. I could create my own team and have no one on it yet. But in my mind, I'm there to help the individuals who want to get involved, but
that's good.
Don't have another group yet.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you have a name for it in your head?
No, I can't commit on the spot.
Okay. I came up with Roe v. Wade, like, and then I saw it and I was like,
it's so good. It's so good.
It's
also
Bull v. Wade. That's like
Bull v. Wade. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Abortpins was like, you know, second
like
best.
It.
Yeah. No, it's very good.
Yeah.
It's very
this
tasteless.
One doesn't have anything to do with, abortion, but like I can't believe it's not gutter.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Is a really good one.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of some of the other really good ones.
Nationally, there's a few Bowling Green survivors.
Yep.
Oh yeah, yeah.
She's good.
Yeah. And where is who currently on like the list of like top national teams?
Eight.
As it, did you check right before this?
Okay. How many are there? A lot.
Oh,
like
a
hundreds.
Lot. No, not a. Are you talking about
altogether nationally? Yeah,
altogether nationally, I would say there's probably like 40.
Oh, okay,
40, 50.
Oh, wow.
But Ohio has two funds up there, which is incredible.
That is awesome.
Because we're not the only abortion fund in Ohio. There's also, but we're the only independent to a clinic abortion fund.
Right.
A preterm, which is the independent clinic, up in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
There. Awesome rock stars up there.
Yeah.
Kind of your dream clinic that just has like all of these like wonderful posters and you're just like, you walk in, it's just this like, you know,
like Leslie Knope designed the whole building.
It really is.
Yeah.
They have like a reflection room and like flags that say like, you know, you're loved, you're making the right decision. Like, oh my gosh, you walk into a hug.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love it there. They have little rocks with affirmations on it and it's so good.
Cute.
But they also have a NANAF fund as well. But they fund preterm patients.
Okay.
We also fund preterm patients. We additionally fund the other clinics in the state.
Okay.
Yeah. And the development director there used to be kind of run women have options. So
okay.
We're all real close, real friendly.
Yeah, all together.
Are you looking up where we are right now?
I was trying, but...
Yeah, have we hit 30,000? That's my question.
Are you checking stuff?
When Lauren got here, she was like, I was actively refreshing over and over again. We're $200 away.
I felt comfortable telling you that because I knew Steph was doing the same
thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I check my team every day, and if nothing's happened, I'll be like, hey guys, what's going on? You haven't been very active on this lately. And then, I don't know, someone will post something and then it'll shoot up. How many people?
Yeah.
I think there are 11 people on it. It's pretty big.
Holy moly.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
But I know some of them can't bowl, I think. Amber at least can't.
What?
She's hosting at one.
Oh, yeah. She can't like actually be there.
Yeah.
So, I thought you meant like she physically can't like, pick
no.
up a bowling ball.
No.
She's
slightly malnourished, but you know, it's fine.
I was like, what? I was like, that's a weird pre-existing condition.
No.
Like,
no, she can, I think.
I mean, there are some people that have told me I'm allergic to bowling.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
right.
Actually, that phrase has crossed their lips. We haven't gotten to 30,000 quite yet.
Okay.
So we're eking towards there, and it's just like, oh, I gotta get it tonight.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, like, the most we've ever raised is 27,000.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And we're still 25 days from the bowl-a-thon. Last year, we raised $15,000 in the last week before the bowl-a-thon.
Wow.
So we have just a little over 5,000 before our goal. So there may be some stretch goals in our future, and because there's just so much time.
Yeah, a lot of time.
So good.
Yes. What is your like dream scenario? Like, I mean, in reality, like how much do you think you could raise?
I think we could raise $50,000.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
How close is the national organization to a million? Do you know?
I can click on the... Yeah.
I'm very interested. And this is...
At least 50%. At least halfway there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're recording on April 5th. So
for the
bowl-a-thon is like, the end of the month, right? The 29th. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
So nationally... people have raised $692,330.24 so far, with still about a month left for abortion access.
We can do it.
And like the pie in the $1 million was like a pie in the sky. Like, I think we can, but like,
because
I think last year was like 600,000 or something like that. It wasn't, I mean...
Yeah.
A million's like a lot.
That's
like
lot.
Real money.
Yeah.
That's like real money.
Yeah. That's like campaign money.
Exactly. But for abortion access.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's my favorite part.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't started a team yet, this episode is publishing on Sunday. FYI, Brian.
No, thanks
for having to turn around pretty fast. So if you don't have a team yet, there's still time. Mm-hmm. Lauren will be starting a team soon. So if you don't have anyone to be on a team, contact the bowl-a-thon email.
Yeah.
And I also can take people on my Make Abortion Great Again team.
Okay.
And there's also the Spare Pens team that Andrea always has. And the Spare Pens are also... a open team, so there are plenty of teams to join.
Yeah,
and you've got still plenty of time. I mean,
yes,
I think still like a third of the people haven't even started fundraising yet. So what I'm saying, like, I really think that we can make. I think we can take it to 50,000.
Yes,
I really think we can take it to 50,000.
Yeah.
I think this is reasonable.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
get moving.
People are seriously making fundraising pages every day.
Yeah,
it's.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We might have twice as many people as last year at the bowl-a-thon.
Yeah.
It's going to be quite the party.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're it's like, oh, man. We need to order more cupcakes.
That's going to be great.
I feel, the ooh-la-las have said that they can bring the vulva photo backdrop that they had at the... at the event at their Bust and Stigma events. So we might have, you know, a vulva cut through photo backdrop, and there'll be lots of fun things. Even if you hate bowling,
yeah,
there's gonna be a costume contest.
Okay.
People dress up as all sorts of different things. yeah. Mostly so superheroes, because it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
It is so much fun.
Brian, what are you going to dress up as?
Oh, God. I don't know. What should I dress up as?
I don't know. We'll figure something out for you. Maybe we'll paint your face. Yeah. You have a very paintable face. It's a nice canvas there.
I could use a new look.
Yeah. You need a new look. I'm
kidding. I have a question, by the way.
You have a question? Brian has a question. What is it? Here,
grab that really quick.
Okay. So, Christina already covered most of the stuff I wrote down while I was thinking about things. So, she's fantastic. So, I only have to really ask you guys one. In your opinion, how do you think a man should treat a close female friend or a family member when they go through an unplanned pregnancy?
All right.
Good question.
That is a great question. Mm-hmm. I think that's because unplanned pregnancies... just like abortion. So no matter what somebody chooses, they're still stigmatized for it, mm-hmm. whether it's single parenthood or adoption or abortion. There's really no winning mm-hmm. for the woman when it comes to an unplanned pregnancy. So there's actually a really great there's a really great video that recently we posted on Facebook, essentially going through this process. But simplified completely, it's being there for her or for them and talking about and just being supportive no matter what their decision is. Mm-hmm. Reminding them that it is their decision, holding back any opinions that you might have unless they ask for it.
Yeah.
Sometimes somebody wants just to kind of have somebody to talk at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To feel validated. Mm-hmm. Sometimes somebody wants to be alone and you have to say, okay, because that's best. But saying, do you need something? Feeding people is a really great, that they, just really crave a Coke float, when they're stressed out, getting them, gestures that you care mm-hmm. and gestures that that you value them and that you understand that this is not something that, is easy. The decision might be easy for them. That's something that happens. But even if the decision is easy, the process for any of those three things is not, mm-hmm. There's either the barriers to abortion access or holy cow, 9 months of pregnancy. Right. Yeah. And all the things that come with that. Mm-hmm. So, making sure that they know that you trust them, that you are there for them no matter what, and gestures mm-hmm. that you care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have not seen the video, but that's what I was going to echo. Just listening to what they need, being attentive to what they're saying, whether it's, I want to talk about this, I don't. Like you said, just kind of anything that you can do to reinforce their decision or just make whatever of the process that remains as easy as possible for them.
Because no matter what, you might be that only friend or family member right. who gives them that space and who doesn't talk at them. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't say, you should do this, you should do that. So being that person that comes up and says, can I listen? Would you like me to listen? I trust you no matter what you decide. And yeah.
Yeah. Just being empathetic and compassionate sounds like a lot of what can really help a person, mm-hmm. which is generally in life a good thing to live by, I think.
Well, yeah. Practice.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We only just live. I feel like people can, and I feel like we create structures to do that and to be that, but our culture is so against empathy.
Yeah. That's true. It's like there's a lot of like this side versus this side, and it's really, really hard to connect, especially mm-hmm. in like our political climate, you know. Even I mean, mm-hmm. like I believe that, but I get stressed out and annoyed and angry, and I end up not listening, and I end up, you know, sort of like lashing out at the other side. So
right. The default can be to just give your opinion before yeah. taking a beat.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether it's necessary.
Right.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who are on the opposition side mm-hmm. who come about that decision in, you know, some really personal ways. Mm-hmm. You know, I have, you know, some friends who are adopted, and so they come about that decision, while I don't understand it, it is so kind of ingrained with them.
Yeah.
And I hope they come around to saying like, oh, your mother made that decision and that was great, but not all women can do that.
Yeah.
But it just, that doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad person. Right. It's just like there's something that is so like indoctrinated yep. into their minds, or the folks that, you know, can't get pregnant yeah. and they so want to. And I'm like, still, it's not that woman's responsibility to have a baby for you, but like, it's still like, that's painful for them. It's yeah. like, it's not necessarily a, healthy way to deal with that pain. I yeah. don't think, but like, I think that there are other ways to handle that. But you know, it's important to listen. It's important to be empathetic.
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to change hearts and minds.
Right.
And it's going to, like, this debate mm-hmm. that is so personal to so many of us, mm-hmm. we have to make it personal for everybody.
Right.
This is, I mean, it's the same way that won the right to gay marriage. It's because it became personal for people.
Yeah.
Like people came out of the closet bravely
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we need to allow folks who have had abortions to come out of that closet and right. to tell their stories, to tell their families.
Right.
And when it becomes personal, when those, you know, one in nearly three women who have abortions tell the folks that they're around that they've had abortions and why, and feel safe doing that, mm-hmm. it'll change this conversation completely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
It really mm-hmm. does.
Yeah.
And I think just creating that world for them, you know, is part of the little, like, things that all of us can do.
And being radically, you know, pro, you know, whatever your decision is.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. and I think, you know, that's it. Not being afraid to say abortion, not being yeah. afraid to, it's mm-hmm. making that space and making it as safe as possible.
To kind of build off what Steph said, I think there are a lot of uphill battles in our work right now, but yeah. one of the exciting things is that not everyone knows about abortion funds and that they exist, and that as the conversation, as we start to have these conversations, people are realizing that this purpose exists and that they can tap into it. And it does make it easier to, I guess, share and get on board and just start chipping away at the stigma
mm-hmm.
of it. I think, you know, people know, you say Planned Parenthood, people know what that entails.
Yeah.
When people say abortion funds, they might not know immediately. You know, they could probably have an idea, but it's our chance to kind of educate people and bring them in. And honestly, Bullathon is probably the number one way that people learn about women have options.
Yeah.
And it's just people going out and fundraising for the Bullathon as bowlers, and just people learn, and kind of how the Women's March snowballed
mm-hmm.
and just more and more people are like, well, obviously I support this. Where do I sign up? Like,
yeah,
that's
right.
That's a big part of Bullathon.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why we've been so successful so far, and why the next few weeks are going to be really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a good note to end on. Do you guys feel like, do you feel like there's anything else you want to talk about? Any other?
I think we're good.
All
think
right.
I just, yeah.
Know
just,
where to find us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Do you want to like shout out your, your social or anything?
Yeah. womenhaveoptions.org.
Okay.
And it's mm-hmm. a you know, a website where you can sign up to volunteer, to fundraise for us, to do, mm-hmm. to, you know, to get involved. We are a statewide organization. We're trying to do more things around the state mm-hmm. and not just in Central Ohio. So, yeah. That's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. And we are also, you know, we do the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Instagrams.
Okay.
I don't understand the Snapchats yet.
No, I don't either.
I'm trying.
You just joined, though.
I did just join personally.
Yeah.
And I think I might take myself too seriously for Snapchat.
The filters are really confusing to me. Oh, although, man. I love the voice change. That's cute. That is cute.
Yeah. But like the puking rainbows
you draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, you really do. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Lauren, anything else?
No.
You good?
I know. People will know where to find me for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Bolathon at womenhaveoptions.org.
There you go.
And, like, you know, it's not hard to fundraise for Bolathon. Like, we also give you templates. There are, like, you know, mm-hmm. We give people some ideas to make it easy, as well as to figure out how to talk about abortion. Because I think that's like one of the biggest hurdles for people is like, how do I talk about abortion? And mm-hmm. what happens if my great Aunt Joan like says, and knowing that there's a community of support that's going to like have their back.
Right.
You know, for those social media fights.
Yes.
Yeah. And how to get around the social media fights in that way. So,
yeah. Sure.
There are a lot of people.
Good deal. Well, Jen's home, so I guess this is the end.
Oh, yep.
Thank you for being here. So lovely to
have
you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. This has been really fun.
Yeah. Yay. Thank you.